你去接下去了，你来嘛，去接下去。看到没了？啊，你去接了。地球的家伙，你呢？啊嘞，那嘎桑很多，这个东北你写的去发现人民解放过了，这个书，你呢东西，刚才跟你什么当过的，在地过嘛，这个书说，你呢学呢，当然这个在这个没大把的，东西大，你那个多把了呀，那算那么多，要不起码三百呢？ 那个什么来着？当然多土窑嘛，类似的，加上别些那个送菜送送送啊，就像第一张那个，那几个都算那么在啊，学会的呀，这两个就一年一年的了，那老人带的了，今年我这个讲不到什么节啊，当那几个马戏真真真说，一万江吧，可是年节一万江吧，三当八三那么大三当的国庙当，今年那就是三当，那今年呀这个。
Good morning. So yesterday we spoke about the perfection of wisdom. So we looked at the presentation on emptiness, and we looked at how one should think about this topic of emptiness. So to understand this topic is difficult, and to understand it one needs to have accumulated a vast store of merit. Without such a vast store of merit, it is very difficult to understand this presentation on emptiness. So with this in mind, then when we engage in our morning, in our practice, for example, in the morning, we get up, we make some offerings, maybe do some prostrations, and then we engage in the cultivation of our motivation for the day, for example, or including the generation of the mind of bodhicitta and its branches of love and compassion and the like, and thereafter engaging in a meditation on emptiness. So through going through the stages sequentially like this, we will be accumulating the merit required to come to understand the subtle object like a subtle object like emptiness. So therefore, this is something that we all need to do. And then just following on from that, to say from my side, the difficulty you had in understanding yesterday afternoon's presentation was because I wasn't understanding either. So if I don't understand, it's kind of difficult to say clearly. So for that I apologize. Then I spoke with Genda last night, and he's agreed to present these four great proofs of emptiness again in the future, and possibly when he's finished the presentation on 37 practices, then maybe a weekend or so, we'll present these four great proofs again, as well as the some of the additional proofs, such as Chandrakirti's sevenfold reasoning. So between now and then, I will follow this advice Ken has just given about accumulating more merit, trying to understand this a bit better, and then we'll all come to understand it later on.
Mm-hmm.
검진의 Now we'll continue with the presentation, meditating on emptiness. So how to meditate on what we spoke about yesterday, and because as we've seen that without meditating on emptiness, then the attainment of Buddhahood will not come.
然心达尼秘密别是多啦，但秘密然心达尼秘密是然心，然心也在的点不住吧？是不嘞？在那点不住吧？有嘛嘞？在的是个嘛？
So can I then read the first two? Yeah, okay, let's say he read verse 53. Thus, whatever is meditation on selflessness, in that it does not observe an inherent nature in phenomena, is a cultivation of wisdom. And then can I say that this term inherent nature refers to true existence. So there's no true existence in phenomena. So yesterday it was we covered the last verse, I think, that we covered. In there, Lama Atisha said that this topic of emptiness, in terms of the reasonings and that one needs to engage in to meditate on, so as to come to understand emptiness, this is presented in a vast fashion in a wide number of texts, or is presented in a vast number of texts. So this was something that Lama Atisha mentioned in the verse we looked at yesterday.
So in
this verse now, it's being stated that all phenomena are not truly existent or not inherently existent. And so, what just to remind ourselves what we looked at yesterday, so what does the true existence mean? How would a phenomenon exist if it were truly existent? Well, then it would not be dependent on causes and conditions. So it would be independent of causes and conditions, and therefore wouldn't change. Whatever object appears to our mind, it appears as being truly existent. It appears as being not dependent on causes and conditions. It appears as being independent of causes and conditions. Therefore, all phenomena that appear to us, all objects that appear to our mind, appear as being truly existent or inherently existent. Now, in terms of the process of investigation, there are two steps to start with. So the first step in our investigation is to come to see how objects appear to us. So we first need to have a recognition of how an object appears to us. Then the second step is to investigate whether the object exists in the way that it appears. So the first step is to see how the object appears to us. And then when we come to see how it appears to us, the way objects do appear to us now is that they appear as being independent of causes and conditions. They appear not to have arisen from causes and conditions. So we first need to come to see that. We first need to come to see how the object appears. Then once that first step is completed, then we go to the second step, which is to investigate that appearance. So now that I see how the object appears to me, does it exist in that way that it appears? And that is the second step.
Again,
the first thing we need to do is to come to see how something appears. So this is also has the process of investigation, because we're investigating to see how something appears. And once we've completed this first step, we have we understand how all phenomena appear to us. We then go to the second step, which is to investigate whether this appearance is in accordance with reality. We investigate that if whether this appearance is how the object exists. Let's take an illustration. So in the classical text, they mention a cart, but we don't utilize carts so much anymore, so let's look at a car. So first of all, if we're looking at an object of a car, as we've seen, the first thing is, how does this car appear to us? How does this phenomenon, this object, appear to us? So we need to investigate how this car, this vehicle, appears to us, and we'll see that it appears to us as being not dependent. It appears as if it is established from its own side, not dependent on causes and conditions. So that's the first step. If you then ask yourself, so is there such a thing as a car? Does the car exist? Then of course, yes, there is a car. We can use a car, we can drive the car, so there is such a thing as a car. It's not that a car is non-existent. However, let's look at now how this car appears to us. So does this car that appears to us as not being dependent on causes and conditions, as being existent from its own side, in other words, being truly existent, does such a car exist? In other words, the way the car appears to us, does that exist? And that's what we need to investigate.
Mother
So then, now we come to investigate how this car appears to us. So we've seen how this car appears. Now we come to investigate this. So the car appears to us as not being dependent on causes and conditions. It's just there, and it appears as if it's unchanging. However, if we think about it a bit, it's very clear that a car does depend on causes and conditions. It requires to be made, etc. It needs all its parts, etc. And if one were to separate the parts from the car, or separate the car into its parts, for example, we put the wheels there, the engine over there, the body over here, the seats over there, then what do we have? Do we have a car? Not at all. We have over there seats, or here we have just maybe a wreck of a car, just the bodywork, etc. So we wouldn't say that we have a car. And that's because the car car is dependent on parts. And it's dependent on all these causes coming together, such as the parts being assembled by technicians and the like. So this then shows us quite clearly that a car is dependent. It is dependent. It is not independent of causes and conditions and independent of parts. So coming to understand this, we can see that the car is dependent. It is not. It doesn't exist in the way that it appears, which is not dependent on causes. So just again briefly, the way the car appears to us is as if it were truly existent. In other words, not dependent on causes and conditions and parts and the like. But when we investigate, a car is dependent on causes and conditions and parts, because if these don't all come together, then there is no such thing as a car. And so therefore, the way the car appears to us and the way that it exists are not in accordance. Having then completed this investigation on the object of our personal car, we then move the object and we go to, say, someone else's car. And we investigate to see if someone else's car, does it exist in the way that it appears? Does it exist in this truly existent way, this way of not being dependent on causes and conditions and the like? And we'll come to the same conclusion, that it's not only my car that is dependent on parts and causes and conditions, but so is my friend's car, so are all the cars in Australia, and in fact all the cars anywhere in the world. They are all dependent on causes and conditions, they're all dependent on parts, etc. None of them exist in a way that is, none of them exist in the way that they appear in this truly existent manner. So there's not a single car that can be found that that is not dependent. There's not a single car that can be found that exists in the way that it appears in this truly existent way, in this way that appears to be independent of causes and conditions. Thinking in this coarse way, we can come to understand that, and in fact, it's easy to understand that the car that appears to us as being truly existent, in other words, appearing not to be dependent on causes, then it doesn't exist in this way. It is clearly dependent on causes. So therefore, the way that it appears and the way that it exists, these are contradictory. So this, if we think about it, is very easy to understand. Now we take the meditation to maybe the third step, to the next step. So now we say we look for that in the car that we use. We investigate it to see, so where can I find the car? So we'll first start to look amongst the individual parts. So we'll look at the door, and we'll say, is this my car? And of course it's not, it's a door. And if we look at the seats, are these seats my car? Is this where the car can be found? And the answer, of course, is not. These are seats, etc. And we would continue throughout all the various parts of the car and see that the car cannot be found amongst any of these parts. So we're doing this definitely mental contemplation. We now have broken our car up into parts, and now we're continuing this investigation. So where amongst these parts can I find the car? So we look first of all, say, at the doors. No, these doors are not the car, these are doors. So this isn't the car. So we put it behind us. Then we look at, say, the wheels, and no, these are just wheels, they're not the car. So we put them to one side. And we continue looking at the steering wheel, the seats, the engine, etc. And in none of them, we can find the car. And in fact, each one we're just putting to the side. And in the end, what do we have before us? Nothing. Okay, so moving then from maybe what sounded like quite physical car parts to remind ourselves that this is, of course, a mental contemplation. So now we've mentally separated the car into all its parts and seen that the car doesn't exist in any of these parts at all. So then what are we left with? We then left with an understanding of emptiness, in that the car cannot be found. We've looked for the car amongst all of these parts, and we haven't been able to find it. So this then, we left with an understanding of mere perception. So this mere perception or mere perceiving, this is an understanding of emptiness. And that is what we are left with once we've investigated whether the object can be found amongst any of its parts. Seeing that it's not, or it cannot be found amongst any of its parts, we come to an understanding of mere perception. And this mere perception is an understanding of emptiness. This meditation that has been explained is something that's easy for us to do and to understand. Or it's easy for us to understand and then do. And when one comes to this understanding, it doesn't mean then one has realized emptiness, of course. But one needs to go from this very coarse understanding to an understanding that's much, much subtler. And but nevertheless, this is the process. This is the starting point. To get to a much subtler understanding, and that would be the actual understanding of emptiness. Okay, yeah. So then the next step in the meditation, maybe the fourth one, but I'm not too sure. The next step in the meditation, so we start with this coarse investigation, seeing whether the car can be found amongst its parts. We cannot find it, and we come to an understanding of emptiness. And so here, we have a doubt coming up that this car then doesn't exist. But it does exist. So if we, on one hand, saying, I can't find the car, but on the other hand, we hear the car exists. Then, so how does this car exist? Well, the car does exist. We can show that the car exists because we can use it. We can drive this car. So therefore, the car must exist because we can drive it. So how does it exist? It exists as a mere imputation. It's merely imputed by mind. So again, we do the investigation. We come to understand that the car cannot be found amongst any of these parts. And so then we may think that the car doesn't exist, but we know it exists because we can use it. So the car does exist, and we know this because it serves the function as a car. We can drive the car. So therefore, how does this car exist? It exists as a mere imputation by mind.
那你的也怕累怕大什么但是大什么银白的按这个的别的话其实家里的地里塞入这就塞完了什么大白呢别的没着了呀这个蒙古有了吧这个命大嘛大小了吧别的拽着塞嗯其实没着几个人的你给人的拽着塞没着的可以的是呢这些结巴结巴那些呢你也给你们都了吧那个人了呢给你几岁的累怕大小吧怎么去别的他的拽着塞没着小了吧
This concept of mere imputation by mind is something very important to understand in the context of emptiness. So let's use another illustration to make this even clearer. So in the world of cars, there are many different brands, for example, Toyota. Now, what makes a Toyota a Toyota? Well, originally, maybe Mr. Toyota created a company, and he created cars, and people ask, what are these cars called? And then he thought, oh, I'll call them after myself, and these are Toyotas. But before he named the cars Toyota, or his company Toyota, no one would have called those cars Toyotas. So the only reason people later on called these vehicles Toyotas is because this name was merely labeled by I. This name Toyota was merely labeled by mind. This name Toyota was merely labeled by mind onto these objects of cars. After that was done, then everyone would see a Toyota and know that that was a Toyota. Before, everyone would see those same cars and not be able to label them something because that hadn't been done yet. So this shows how this mere labeling by mind works. This concept of mere imputation by mind. So in this example, this illustration of Toyota vehicles, before Toyota was labeled onto these cars, maybe you would have a factory of cars which hadn't yet been branded. So no one would be calling these Toyotas. But after these were called Toyotas, then the name was imputed onto these vehicles, this name Toyota, then people would talk about this fantastic new car called Toyota. They would want to go and buy a Toyota. They would want to drive a Toyota. So then this Toyota came about, so to speak. So this is this process of labeling here, and this process of labeling here, labeling by mind, this is something that relates to all phenomena. However, if this Toyota vehicle were truly existent, then this vehicle wouldn't have required to have a name imputed on it. It wouldn't have required a number of parts to be assembled. It wouldn't have required skilled workmen to assemble the car. So, because all of these stages, or this process, this dependent process was required, then this car is not truly existent. And if we investigate, we'll see that there is no phenomenon that can be found that is truly existent. So moving on from the Toyota, let's look at the situation for human beings. So human beings, we also, of course, merely impute by mind. So we take someone called Lobsang. So when Lobsang was born, Lobsang wasn't yet named Lobsang. Lobsang would have been a newborn. And before that moment, when the mother was pregnant, then the fetus wouldn't have been Lobsang. That would have been a fetus. It was only after the child was born and the name that Lobsang would have been named. So this is clearly we having a name imputed by mind, merely labeled by mind, onto this object, this human being, called Lop, and then called Lobsang. Before that, wasn't Lobsang. And then, now this young child is Lobsang, it will grow up, and the young child will think of himself or herself as Lobsang. And if anyone, if someone were to say to you, "Are you Tsering?" they'd say, "No, I'm Lobsang." So here they are thinking of themselves as Lobsang. And furthermore, this Lobsang is able to engage in a variety of activities and do things, etc. So can perform the activities as Lobsang. So this shows how that onto this human being, there was a mere imputation by mind of the name Lobsang. And then this, Lobsang was able to function with this name. But if we then investigate and see, so where is the Lobsang with this human being? Well, there wasn't a Lobsang at the moment of birth or in the time before the birth. And if we continue then to investigate, we'll come to see, in the same way as the car, if we continue to investigate, we'll come to see that there is no Lobsang to be found at all. And therefore, Lobsang is also only merely imputed by mind. This investigation we are doing is the we are investigating for investigating for true existence. So this is the meditation on emptiness. So we started out looking at a car, we then went on to Lobsang. So now let's talk about the self. When we talk about the self, it would be in the context, for example, of, oh, I'm happy today, oh, I'm feeling a little bit ill today, etc. So here we're talking about the I, the self. So the investigation here is the same process as we had previously with the car and with Lobsang. And we investigate to see first of all, how the self appears, and then does it exist in the way that it appears. So just in the same way that we took a car and we mentally divided it up into its parts, we do the same with the body. So the self that appears as being truly existent, can I find it in my skin, in my arm, my legs, my heart? Can't find it in the body. So then we go to the minds, and then we look amongst our various minds. So I'm feeling happy today. Is this happy feeling, this happy mind, is that the I? And then we can go through all our various minds. For example, we're meditating, maybe the mind's quite calm. Is this calm mind the I? And we continue looking now through all the various minds to see whether the I can be found amongst the various minds, and we see that it's also not there. So the I cannot be found amongst the parts, either the physical parts or the mental parts or the mental aggregates.
Some
So again, the way we've had the meditations presented is a way that we can understand. So because we can understand them, this presentation is quite coarse. But as we engage in this meditation, then we will be able to investigate for the I or for the self in a subtler and subtler way. So, for example, we can, if someone were to ask, are you your arm? Of course we're not. Are you your head? Of course we're not. So this kind of coarse understanding we can come to very easily. So we do this investigation, and of course we can see that we're not to be found, or the self or the I is not to be found amongst the aggregates, either the physical or the mental aggregates. But yet, when we look at, say, for example, we can see that the self is not to be found in the arm or the head, etc. Yet, these are connected. They aren't totally separate. So it's not that there's no relationship between the aggregates and the self. So here, the understanding that one will come to with a subtler meditation is that the aggregates and the self are of the same nature. So again, now with the subtler meditation, we see that there's a connection between the aggregates and the self. And here we come to the understanding that the aggregates, so the mental and the physical aggregates, these are of the same nature as the self. Then you have to pump de dan not duck, de mobile.
Jesanda dinin dang and do pumbo ganga said the pumbo chile dene shaya mato. Pumbola, Maduva, Jacoron, when you drew together, Langu, when you drew together, Maduva, Madi, Homares, Dimia Badelanga, Temba Madubari, Casa, Temba Madubari, Languas. Dine, how go on to Dela and Casa, Dime Tobari, Legurua.
Pitama again?
Dime, how could work Tobaris? Temba never Tobar, Tony Tobar.
Ale, ale. Seeing then that the aggregates and the physical and mental aggregates are of the same nature as the self, we can see there's a relationship between the two, and therefore there's a relationship of dependence between the two. So the self is therefore clearly not independent of the aggregates, but has a relationship with them. They are of the same nature. And then this understanding is an understanding of emptiness. You can even say a realization of emptiness. So this was actually what was explained yesterday, but the meaning of what was explained yesterday and what has just been presented now is exactly the same. The words differ, but the meaning is the same.
Then I did Kagirisha, that too, cinema. Then I made Subinalo Kawa, who do, cinema, Subotiki, Pa Yawashi, and the same Nalo Kawa. Sim,
Dema
Tonyuko, やけどこれ。
Then here, the advice is, in our meditation, we start off by generating mind such as refuge, then contemplating the various stages of the meditation on bodhicitta, thinking of the kindness of our mothers, etc., generating bodhicitta, and then starting to investigate, then going to the meditation on emptiness. So this is a sequence that we should engage in, and in this way we'll become more and more familiar with the understanding of emptiness. So we start with going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and our teachers. Then we generate the mind of bodhicitta, and then we start to meditate on emptiness. So we start in terms of the selflessness of the I. In terms of selflessness, we first look amongst the body, we look amongst the various minds, as was described before, and we'll see quite quickly that the self is not any of the body parts, nor is the self any of our individual minds. So this mind, say, of attachment, this mind of anger, this mind of love, none of these are the actual self or the actual I. So we continue this process of looking for this I that appears as truly existent and looking for it amongst the body parts and amongst the aggregates, and we come to see that we cannot find it. So this is the meditation on emptiness, and then when that is completed, we then finish our meditation session, and then now we've of course generated a good motivation, and we go about our activities for the day. So these would be the practices of accumulating virtue. So whatever one is engaging in, whether it's maybe directly Dharma-related activities, such as making offerings or offering mandala, or whether it's whatever activities one generally engages in, one does that as part of an accumulation of merit. And also, one would attend teachings whenever one has the opportunity, so as to further one's understanding, and then, of course, continue with this meditation. So, like we heard yesterday, one meditates in this way, then has the in-between session where one engages in virtuous activities, and then meditates once again. So this process of meditation and the in-between activities, these two should be continuously done like this. So now this, if we do this, we'll come to an understanding of emptiness. And this understanding of emptiness is very subtle, and it's difficult to understand. And in fact, not only is it difficult to understand, but it's not possible to express clearly with in speech. So hence in the text it's often referred to as being inexpressible. So what this means is that the kind of understanding that we will gain from texts and from teachings, this is a coarse understanding that we will gain. Even when the teachings are going to a subtler level, this will still be coarse compared to the actual realization. Then we need to meditate on this. And when we're meditating, we should be meditating in accordance with the teachings that we've received. So, for example, in our teachings, we received a number of stages how to meditate on emptiness. First this, then that. Or first, I think it must see how the object appears, seeing it as truly existent, then investigating it, etc. So we go through those various stages of the meditation as was presented to us by the teacher. And as we do this again and again and again, we'll come to see whether the teachings that we have received, the advice from our teachers here, and our meditative experience, whether they are in accordance, whether the two match each other. And when we're seeing that actually the way that the teachings have matched, the teachings have been presented, that I need to meditate on emptiness in these various ways, this is true, this is in accordance with reality, this is correct, the correct technique, and now I'm coming to see reality. Then when one sees that the advice and one's meditation experience are in accordance, they're not contradictory, they're in accordance, then one has come to an understanding of the truth. One has come to an understanding of emptiness. We could even say a realization of emptiness. So here this emphasizes the importance on meditation as well as the accumulation of virtue and including study. If when we, for example, go to a dangerous part of town, fear will arise in us, and possibly even the hair on the back of our neck will arise. Similarly, if we encounter great suffering, then we will cry uncontrollably. And so we have experiences of very strong reactions sometimes like this. Also with joy, at times we can be particularly joyful. So we have an experience of strong emotion like this. When a practitioner is hearing teachings on emptiness and has been meditating on emptiness for a period of time, and they react in a similar way to that, in other words, with these very strong emotions, maybe crying, or maybe even giving rise to fear or tremendous joy, then this is an important sign. So someone who gives rise to such signs is someone who's very close to realizing emptiness.
Dame pane gom gom gai dini shira gom ba yinsa
konagala
dame pane gom gai dini shira gom ba yinsa jesa dini ge tonyu to bi ge shira dini ge demba ma du ta me ba sne demba me ba demba re dini ge sam da demba me ba to ne dini ge mindu nye be lo ti je ba dini ge je ba che de la ne tonyu gom ba la go re tonyu le je ba chi go dini ge da dini ge demba du ba mindu sam be lo ti 然后接纳好过落地了，动于对别写了，他过来，其实动于对别写了，结果把对了，俺动于对别写了，共把他过来，这里，其实他的写是写了一盘都清白色的，哎，写了一盘清，两面写的地的地的起来过来。And
the first two lines of verse 53, thus whatever is meditation on selflessness, yeah, that kind of makes it so that maybe just that, so. When one is meditating on when one is in meditation, is looking to see whether the object exists in the way that it appears. So in other words, whatever phenomenon one is meditating on, seeing how it appears, in other words, as truly existent, then investigating whether it exists in that way, then this is the meditation on emptiness. So the meditation on emptiness is investigating whether an object exists in the way that it appears. And then when one comes to the understanding that the object does not exist in the way it appears, the object is not truly existent, then this is the realization of emptiness. Or we can maybe say in our case, this is a correct understanding of emptiness that arises in meditation. And this then is the practice of the perfection of wisdom. Then with reference to verse 54, then whatever phenomenon we are investigating, we are then investigating with this wisdom that is meditating on emptiness. And it's because what we're doing is we're investigating to see whether this phenomenon exists in the way that it appears. And we come eventually to the understanding that the way that it appears as being truly existent, as not being dependent on causes and conditions and parts and the like, this is not how it exists. And then this is the understanding of emptiness, or the realization of emptiness. So when engaging in the investigation whether an object exists in the way it appears, then we're performing the meditation on emptiness. When we come to the understanding that it doesn't exist in the way that it appears, then this is an understanding or a realization of emptiness. Furthermore, then in a vast number of both sutras and treatises or commentaries on those sutras, then the Buddha and the authors of these treatises, they have described what true existence is, what the meditation on emptiness is, as well as then the nature of reality, so what one would the conclusion one would come to. So this is something that has been explained by the Buddhas and in many commentaries as well.
So we'll stop here for this morning. Then yesterday and today we've been looking at the presentation on the perfection of wisdom. And we heard when we started that one needs to attain the exalted state of Buddhahood, one needs to have accumulated both accumulations, the accumulation of merit and the accumulation of wisdom. So therefore one needs to engage in accumulating both of these.
So here now we have, based on our teachings today, we've come to an understanding of how to meditate on emptiness. We also know how to accumulate virtue in between sessions and the like. So just to repeat very briefly, when we engage in meditation, we start by generating refuge, and then through the various stages to cultivate the mind or bodhicitta. And when that has been generated, we then engage in the meditation on emptiness. And as we've heard now, this starts with the investigation, so when we're investigating the self, we first then look, how does the self appear? What appears to my mind? And then we investigate whether it exists in that way. So the first step, how does it appear? So we come to, it appears to us as if it were independent of causes and conditions, independent of parts. Then when we investigate, so is it so? Is it independent of causes and conditions? Is the self independent of parts? During this investigation, we then look for the self within the aggregates, and we'll come to see that it doesn't exist in this way. And how does it exist? We heard this too, but it's merely imputed by mind. So we had the meditation described in detail earlier. So this is the stages one engages in our own meditation, starting with refuge, bodhicitta, and then going into the meditation on emptiness. And then when our meditation is finished, then we need to engage in activities to accumulate virtue. Because to attain Buddhahood, we need these two accumulations, merit and wisdom. And this accumulation of merit comes about through virtuous acts engaged in with a virtuous motivation. And these lead to this accumulation of merit, and also this serves then to power the meditation on emptiness. So this we heard about yesterday as well. Then, in between sessions, we can engage in our normal activities or activities such as making offerings, doing kodha, circumambulation, attending teachings, studying texts, and the like. And all of this leads to the accumulation of merit, which helps to power our meditation. And then, lastly, as we heard yesterday, both of these streams of activities need to be engaged in. If someone is very motivated to realize emptiness, and therefore is meditating, is putting all their energy just into the meditation on emptiness, they won't be able to realize emptiness. They also need to accumulate merit. These two are required. And likewise, someone having the wish to attain, for example, the bodhisattva grounds, progress towards Buddhahood, and certainly to attain their final goal, that of Buddhahood, they need to meditate on emptiness. So just engaging in virtuous activities and accumulating merit, this is not enough. They also need to meditate on emptiness. So therefore, whether one has a disposition in one side or the other side, it's good to be aware that we need to engage in both streams of activities. And lastly, So therefore, it's important that the way to think about emptiness in the way that we've heard about today, because this presentation, whilst it has been on a coarse way to understand emptiness, through such a coarse understanding, one can start the meditation. And having started the meditation, we will start to progress, and our meditation will move to being able to meditate on emptiness. Our meditation will progress so that we are able to meditate on subtler objects and subtler aspects. So then this afternoon we'll start on looking at this the mind of, we usually say discursive thinking. Here we have other terms such as conceptuality or conceptualization. So we'll start to we'll look at that this afternoon. Okay, then it dumpo kesaki kati yankelapkin. Then can a kati de to drink it away? Then in
another day.
First of all, to come back to Gyatso's question from yesterday afternoon, so I'll just repeat the question. Is it correct to say that the merely imputed I is not any of the qualities or the basis of imputation, but it does possess the qualities of the basis of imputation? So the merely imputed I, is not truly established, of course. It's not truly existent. And whilst this merely imputed I may have the qualities of the basis of imputation, these qualities too are not truly existent. So if we then say, because where it gets difficult is if we're saying that this merely imputed I, which is a non-associated compositional factor, has minds in that which are the qualities of the basis of imputation, that then starts to get a little bit difficult to hold in debate. So what one can say is the merely imputed I does have qualities, but these qualities are not truly existent. They too are merely imputed. Okay? Good. Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. See you this afternoon.
Sāshī